Well, put yourself in Mephibosheth's bandaged shoes for a moment. Orphaned, disabled, unable to care for himself, and waiting for the king to set his execution date. It's a pretty dire situation, isn't it? We're going to dive into the story in 2 Samuel chapter 9 now, and we're going to have a look at it in three stages. But this time we're going to look at it from David's perspective. We're going to see that David seeks, finds, and blesses. David seeks, finds, and blesses. So let's begin. David seeks. The story begins with David as king. So if you have your Bibles open, verse 1. David asks, "Is there anyone still left in the house of Saul to whom I can..." How should that sentence end? Remember, Saul was the king before David. "Is there anyone left in Saul's house to whom I can execute, whom I can humiliate, whom I can wipe out?" After all, David can't afford an uprising, not while he's establishing the kingdom of Israel. You see, after a period of war and unrest, David is now in the process of establishing the kingdom of Israel. He's been fighting battles, he's been setting up garrisons throughout the land, and the Lord has been blessing him. But one thing is playing on his mind: is there anyone still left in the house of Saul? But even though we are led to think that David wants to wipe out anyone from Saul's family, that's not how the sentence ends, is it? Have a look again at verse 1. David asks, "Is there anyone still left in the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" You see, after all the victories and being established as a great king, David can't stop thinking about a promise that he had made about 20 years ago to Mephibosheth's father, Jonathan, the son of Saul. So let's go back in time and see what that promise was. David and Jonathan, Mephibosheth's father, they were best friends. And in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 20, David believes that Jonathan's father, King Saul, was trying to kill him. He brings this news to Jonathan. He says, "Your dad's trying to kill me." Jonathan can't wrap his head around that, and he can't really believe it's true. But because his love for David, he promises to work alongside him to figure out whether Saul is actually trying to kill David. And so they come up with a plan, and this plan was going to be really risky. The plan was going to risk his reputation in the kingdom, but it was also potentially risking his life. It's high stakes. And so before everything went down, before they went through to that plan to figure out whether Saul was trying to kill David, Jonathan went to David and he came and he asked him to make a promise. So Jonathan comes up to David before the plan goes down in 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 13. And he says, Jonathan says, "But if my father intends to harm you, David, may the Lord deal with Jonathan, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away in peace. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father, but show me unfailing kindness like the Lord's kindness as long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth." So Jonathan's come to him and said, "Please, like, let's make a promise here. Don't, if Saul is trying to kill you, I'm going to side with you, but don't wipe out my family because I'm being loyal to you." And so David made a covenant with the house of David. This is verse 16 in 1 Samuel chapter 20. He made a covenant, a promise with the house of David. "May the Lord call David's enemies to account." And Jonathan and David reaffirmed, and Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. So you can see what happened. Jonathan planned to side with David if his father Saul planned to kill him. And so David made a promise that as long as he lives, he would always show kindness to Jonathan and his family. And this wasn't just a random promise. David wanted to make this promise because of his love for Jonathan. David committed to showing kindness to Jonathan's family that matched the Lord's kindness to him. "Yes, Jonathan, of course I made that promise to you. Yes, I will always show kindness to you and your family." I'm going to show you kindness like the Lord has shown me kindness. That's a huge promise. And as it turned out, Saul did want to kill David. And so what happened? Jonathan remained true to his word and he sided with David, not his father Saul. Fast forward about a decade, Saul basically has gone mad trying to kill David. And there was tension between Saul and Jonathan. But sadly, as we learned about a couple of weeks ago, both Jonathan and Saul were killed in battle. So that's a fast forward, that's back in time. Now, fast forward back into the time of our passage. David has become the king of Israel. And because David is a man of integrity, he plans to keep his promise to his friend Jonathan. As David established the kingdom, he begins a search for someone from Jonathan's family. David plans to keep his promise to show his kindness to Jonathan's family. And so he searches, he's seeking, and he summons a man called Ziba. Ziba used to be a servant of Saul. And if anyone had the inside scoop on Saul's family, it was going to be Ziba because he was one of the servants. And so in chapter 9, verse 3, if you've got your Bibles open, David asks, "Is there anyone still alive from the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness?" Ziba knows of one person who's still alive from Saul's household, Mephibosheth. And even though David has said that he wants to show kindness, Ziba probably would have been reading between the lines here. Kindness? Yeah, right. David is probably just trying to clear the way so he'd have no uprising and no competition for the throne. So Ziba reluctantly tells David about the one son of Jonathan, the only person left in the house of Saul that is still alive. But Ziba tries to make sure that he doesn't consider him a threat because Ziba still cares about Saul's family. So in chapter 9, verse 3, halfway through, it says, Ziba says, "Well, you know, there is still a son of Jonathan. He's lame in both feet." "Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, he's in the house of Machir, son of Amiel in Lodabar." You can imagine him saying, can't you? "Sire, there is one man left in the house of Saul. But, you know, don't worry about him. He can't compete for the throne. He's lame in both feet. He's also from the town of Lodabar." The town, that name, Lodabar, in Hebrew means nothing. So here's Ziba. He's saying he's a man with a disability from the town of nothing. Can you see what Ziba is trying to say? Like, David, don't worry about him. He's a nobody from nothing. Now, of course, I just want to make the point here. Of course, people with disabilities aren't nobodies. God loves people with disabilities as much as he loves anyone. But the point in this passage here is that Ziba was trying to say, David, Mephibosheth is not a threat to the throne. He's got a disability. He's from the town of nothing. Just, you know, leave him. How are you going? Can you feel the tension? David is trying to seek out someone from Jonathan's family so he can keep his promise to show kindness. But this person from Jonathan's family doesn't want to be found because he thinks that would mean his destruction. So put yourself in Mephibosheth's shoes. Okay, so that's the first thing, David seeks. Second thing we're going to see is David finds. And David isn't put off by a man who is lame in both feet. He isn't put off by a man from the town of nothing. He doesn't even flinch. Have a look at verse 5. "Having found out about Mephibosheth, King David had him brought from Lodabar, from the town of nothing, from the house of Machir, son of Amiel, the nobody from nothing, before the great king of Israel." How's Mephibosheth feeling? He'd been laying low, hoping against hope that David would forget about him. Remember who Mephibosheth thinks he is? He's orphaned and disabled, unable to care for himself. But he's been waiting for the king to set his execution date with no hope of mercy. And now his time has arrived. So just put yourself into the shoes of Mephibosheth here. Maybe something that will help us feel the tension. Personal story, confession. I ran into a parked car the other day. I was in a narrow street and I was pulling off to the side so to let another car through. And unfortunately, I misjudged and I scraped a parked car on the side of the road. My white paint scraped off on the blue car. I'm like, oh no. And then I had to reverse. You know, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And people are watching. I park the car and I get out and I walk towards the closest house. Knock, knock, knock. Coming. Can you feel the tension? They were okay about it, but this is Mephibosheth before David, except he's certain that his time has come. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, this is verse 6, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. Mephibosheth, David said, wince, brace, compose. At your service, he replied. But we, as a reader, we know that there's no reason for Mephibosheth to fear. David had sought out Mephibosheth, not to execute him, but to show him kindness. So David seeks, David finds, and thirdly, David blesses. Mephibosheth then hears the words that he wasn't expecting. He expected judgment, but listen to David's words as Mephibosheth bows down, trembling with fear. David says, Mephibosheth, don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. What? Mephibosheth can't wrap his head around what just happened. What does David mean, restore the land that belonged to Saul? That would make him the richest person in all of Israel. And what does David mean, always eat at his table? That would make him the most privileged person in all of Israel. Mephibosheth can't believe David would be so generous, and so he asks the obvious question in verse 8. Mephibosheth bowed down and said, David, what is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me? But David doesn't respond. Why? Because Mephibosheth should already know the answer. David had already told him in verse 7. Don't be afraid, Mephibosheth, David said to him, for I will surely show you kindness. Why? For the sake of your father Jonathan. Mephibosheth has left a life of poverty in the town of nothing to being, he's left that to being one of the most rich and privileged men in all of Israel. Why? Simply because David made a promise to his father Jonathan. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 15. I'll never cut off my kindness from Jonathan's family, David said. Instead, I will show kindness like the Lord. That's the promise David made. That's a promise that David is keeping. Mephibosheth is scrambling to understand what he had done to deserve this. And he's rightly concluded that he's done absolutely nothing. This man, this nobody from nothing, contributed nothing to the blessing. He was a dead dog. Everything he received was because of David's fulfillment to his father, Jonathan. Mephibosheth is blessed beyond his wildest imagination, all because of a promise and nothing to do with him. And the rest of the chapter shows us this blessing. David followed through. He gave him all the land that belonged to Saul. And Mephibosheth was treated like David's son, sharing at the king's table every night for the rest of his life. Verse 13, and Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. He was lame in both feet. It's a good story, isn't it? Mephibosheth, orphaned, disabled, unable to care for himself and waiting for the king to set his execution date with no hope of mercy. He finds himself treated like the son of a king, rich beyond his wildest dreams, blessed with eating at the king's table, in the king's presence, all because of the promise. But why? Why this story? Why this story in the book of 2 Samuel? Why did the author decide that this would be an important story to tell? Because if I'm honest, as I'm reading through the book of 2 Samuel, it doesn't really seem to fit. The book is all about war and conquest and kings rising and falling. But now we get a story about a nobody from nothing. It doesn't really seem to fit, does it? Well, as I looked into it and as I thought about it, the book of Samuel was probably written to the nation of Israel in the time of the kings. So after David comes a heap of other kings, good kings, bad kings, but primarily they were bad kings. And the bad kings led Israel astray. And so they were pretty much always at war. To live in the time of the kings would have been an absolutely tragic, awful time to live. You know, and so if you're living in this awful time, you can imagine you go to Torah school where you learn from the scriptures. You're a kid and you go to school and you start and you get a history lesson, right? You're sitting there, you've got a bad king over you, the nation is in chaos, and the teacher reads to you the story of David, the great king of old. You hear about the great promise that God gave to David of a new king in David's line that was going to rule forever, a new king like David. And then you come across this story, and you read about how David was a king who always kept his promises, who cared about God and his word, and how David cared about the lowliest of people. You read about Mephibosheth going from a nobody, from nothing, to being blessed, from being an enemy to being a son. Where does your heart go? Remember, so you're sitting in class and you're listening to the history lesson about David and you know about this promise of a future David that's going to be just like that. Where does your heart go? Oh, God. I want another king like David. A good king. A king who cares about God. A king who cares about me. And you long for God to fulfill his promise of a forever king who will be like David. And you dare to hope that maybe, just maybe, that this king would come in your generation. I don't know, maybe you can relate to that. God, I'm sick of leaders who live for themselves. I live in a world that is at war. Countries bomb other countries, innocent people die. Feels like politicians don't care about us. They break promises as easily as they make promises. My country doesn't care about you. Oh God, I want a king who is good. I want a king who cares about you. I want a king who cares about the lowliest of people. I want a king like David. But even as we think these things, we remember that we do have such a king, don't we? Because God did keep his promise to David. His great, 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 great grandson did arrive. And he was better than we ever dared hope. We saw David seek and find and bless Mephibosheth. But didn't Jesus come to seek as well? He came and to seek and save lost sinners, those who had rebelled against him. We saw David find. But didn't Jesus find as well? He came and found his enemies, but didn't treat them as their sins deserved. And we saw that David blessed. But didn't Jesus bless as well? He came and blessed the unworthy, promising them not just land, but an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. And he also invited them to a heavenly banquet where they could always share as God's children at the very table of God forever. Jesus came to seek, find, and bless as well. Why? Not because we're worthy, not because we've earned it, not because we could pay it off. No, no, no. He did it because of the promise. And we benefit if we simply come to King Jesus, turn to him, and live for him. The Christian gospel, the good news of the Christian life, isn't that you're lovely and you're worthy, so God chooses to bless you. No, the gospel is you are, I am, nobody's from nothing. We're as good as a dead dog. Yet in God's kindness, he chooses to bless us because of the promise. And that blessing comes through our King Jesus, the fulfillment of the promise that God gave David over a thousand years ago. We benefit this side of the cross. Let me finish with a story of a man who was a bit like Mephibosheth, whose life dramatically changed when he met his king, Jesus. John, he was a man born on the 4th of August, 1735. It's about 300 years ago. When he was 6 years old, his mum, who he loved so much, passed away. And he was sent off to boarding school when he was 11. Not quite an orphan, but as a young boy, he was all alone. And boarding school was a miserable time for John. After school, he worked in the Navy, and early on, he took leave, and he stayed on leave a little too long. As a result, he was arrested and publicly flogged for being a deserter. He ended up on a merchant ship in the place called Sierra Leone on the west coast of Africa and was often beaten by the captain's wife, who was an African lady. John was depressed, and he called himself a servant of slaves in Africa. He was a servant of slaves. It was a pretty low rank in life for John. Can you hear him say, "I'm a nobody from nothing"? No, he didn't think a king was out to take his life, but he often thought that he'd be better off dead. Life was pretty tough for John. Thankfully, John didn't take his life, but sadly, he went from being abused to being an abuser. Years passed, and he ended up on a slave trade ship, not as a crewman, but as a captain. John swore like a trooper. He misused the Lord's name. He became a violent, ugly man. You would not want to be on one of John's slave trade ships. And then one day it struck him. As he was sailing along, a huge storm struck the ocean and severely damaged the ship. He cried out in that moment, "Lord, have mercy on us." But then he realized he had no leg to stand on. It occurred to him, "Why should God show me mercy? I've done nothing to deserve it." Mephibosheth didn't act like John, but he felt the same way. "I don't deserve anything. And so I shouldn't expect mercy from God." But you know what? God did show mercy to John. He survived that storm. The ship was damaged, but miraculously, it made it to the coast of Ireland. And the first thing he did when he got off, it was he went straight to church. And there he committed himself to the Lord to be only his forever. He decided to turn to Jesus and live for him. And as he knelt before the throne of God asking for forgiveness, what did he find? Did he find judgment? He knew he didn't deserve God's grace. No, he didn't find judgment. He found what Mephibosheth found. He found undeserved kindness. John was a songwriter, and so after he became a Christian, he wrote this famous line, "Amazing grace. How sweet the sound that would save a wretch like me." Behind the scenes, God had sought out John Newton. And as he came to Jesus, he was found, like a lost child returning home. And why did God grant John Newton such amazing grace? It was the same for John as it is for us, as it was for Mephibosheth. He says, he wrote in the same song, "The Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. My hope is in his word. He promised it, I'm going to believe it. I benefit from the promise." And just like Mephibosheth, John was sought out, he was found, and now God blesses. And what was the reward? What was the reward? It was the same for Mephibosheth. He got to be a child of the king all the days of his life. But it was even better for John Newton, and it's even better for us. As he writes in his song, "The earth shall soon dissolve like snow, the sun forbear to shine. But God, who called me here below, he'll be forever mine." I like to think of Mephibosheth sitting in the king's palace day after day. He eats the richest food, most wonderful food, day in, day out. The great king treats him like a beloved son, which brings him endless joy and security. Everything he could ever want is his. I imagine him looking out the window towards the town of Lodabar, the town of nothing, and praising God for his kindness. Tears roll down his face as he thinks of who he was, an orphan, a dead dog, an enemy of the king. And his heart swells with thankfulness as he shakes his head. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. That's our story too, isn't it? And if that's not your story, why don't you come to your king today and find his kindness? Because he will show you kindness. Let's continue.